But it's taken us 2 years to figure out what one state means. I mean, the public doesn't have, you know, we have...
And in summary, the one state solution is?
Is possible.
And substantively means what at this historic juncture?
It means taking a reality that de facto exists and transforming it into a political reality, you know, the way it should be. In other words, a one state already exists, but it's an apartheid one state. So I'd say to transform apartheid into democracy. That's our goal. Put that way, what are pro-Israel people going to say? No, we prefer apartheid? And I can prove, you know, not just me, but, you know, there is an apartheid situation today. So if you can show that, how can you support apartheid?
So, I don't know. They just came up with a whole body of laws that codifies apartheid.
And I think it's alienating the Jewish community. I spoke in a synagogue in Los Angeles, and the people there that weren't young, middle-aged people, were really very upset. They don't say it in public so much, you know, but there is a lot of restlessness below the once you get below the federations, there's a lot of restlessness. Let me tell you one more little tiny thing that I shouldn't tell you. I was invited a few years ago to talk to the Cleveland Jewish Federation, the leaders, and it was supposed to be secret. That's why. And they said, you know, we want to talk with you on condition that you don't talk about BDS or the one state solution. I said, okay, what do I care? And I went to talk with them a few years ago. And at one point, there were five of them, five leaders of the Cleveland Jewish Federation, which is a major community. And at one point, I said, the two state solution is gone. And four of them said, we know. So I think there's a lot of cracks, a lot of movement under the surface that we can galvanize and we can focus if we have this kind of a program.
Well, Jeff Halper, as you continue to organize, thank you very much. Thanks for spending so much time with us.
And we've been very privileged to have Jeff Halper, who's the executive director of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. It is 6:02 p.m. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative, open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmers market every Wednesday year-round, located at Southeast Tibbetts Street and 21st Avenue in Portland. For almost 50 years, online at peoples.coop.
This Saturday, May 18th, 2019, KBOO is co-sponsoring Palestinian Cultural Night, featuring Palestinian music, a dabka dancing workshop, and an iftar meal of traditional Palestinian food. The event will be from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Native American Student and Cultural Center at Portland State University, located at 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. That's this Saturday, May 18th, from 7 to 10 p.m., Palestinian Cultural Night.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host The Bail Trap on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The Bail Trap features short films and speakers on bail fees in the United States. Money bail is one of the main causes of mass incarceration in the United States. Low-income Americans are sitting in jail for days, months, and even years simply because they cannot afford to pay high bail amounts. films include Breaking Down, Deal with the Devil, How Much is Your Freedom Worth, and more. Again, that's The Bail Trap on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
203602, because we do programming like this, which you will hear on absolutely no other network at all. So show that you want to hear programming about the Nakba, that you want to support a free Palestine. Go to your phone, call 516-620-3602 and support this programming as my sister Rachel Salong does.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that introduction, Mimi. Like was said, this is Al Nakba. We are here today to talk more about the history, the legacy of Palestinian resistance. And I just want to remind all of our listeners that we are broadcasting right now in over 28 stations in Palestine, Lebanon, Jordan, Tunis, Morocco, the United States, Canada, and all over our Pacifica network stations. So you are not just here listening locally in New York City by yourself. You're being followed by tons of other people across the world who are listening with you. So tonight on our special on Radio Free Palestine, I'm going to be bringing you some more information and some really great live discussion. Normally, I'm the host of Voices of Resistance, and tonight, this is absolutely about resistance. So we are bringing you a live discussion on local, national, and international struggles for Palestinian liberation. I remember actually something I wanted to share with you, my listeners, organizing a demonstration for August 2nd. I'm the national organizer, one of the national organizers of the Answer Coalition. And in 2014, Israel was bombing Gaza, and there were tens of thousands of people who came out to really support and say no to these bombings and no to the horrible treatment of Palestinian people. So I just thought it was really impressive to me to see that. I remember being a part of that demonstration, and since then we've seen such a massive shift towards talking about what's really going on in Palestine. And like Mimi said earlier, WBAI, this is one of the only places you are going to hear coverage like this. This is the only place you're going to talk with real activists on the ground across the country. So tonight, again, we're going to be discussing things with all of our wonderful guests. In this hour, we're going to be looking at these different perspectives. First, we're going to hear from an interview I did actually earlier this week with Khaled Barakat. He is a Palestinian writer, and he's the international coordinator of the Free Ahmad Sadat campaign. He is currently on Berlin time, so we had to pre-record this. After that, we're going to move on to our next interview, where I'm going to be having Huda Amori. She is the founder and former chair of the BDS campaign at the University of Manchester. She's also the national organizer for the BDS campaigns in the UK, campaigns offering Palestinian solidarity as well in the UK. So it's really exciting to have her. And lastly, we're going to be joined locally by New York City organizers and activists. We're going to be joined by the Palestinian tour organizer, co-founder, film director, co-founder of Existence is Resistance and film director, Nancy Mansour. Nancy's going to be sharing about the recent conference that happened here in New York City. We will also be joined by Nerdine Kiswani. She is the founder and chair of Within Our Lifetime United for Palestine. So that is the program we have up for you. At 9:20, I want you guys to listen up, because we're going to be opening up our phone lines to you, our listeners, to join our program in order to talk about Palestine and talk together. But first, we're going to go to my pre-recorded interview with Khaled. Good evening to our listeners at WBAI. This is Rachel Seelong, and I am here with Khaled Barakat. He is a Palestinian leftist writer, and he's the international coordinator of the campaign to free Ahmad Sadat. So I'm very excited to have him, and he's going to talk with us today about the campaign that he works on, as well as what's going on in Palestine. Welcome, Khaled.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
So can you tell me a little bit more about your work, especially for a United States audience, people who may or may not be familiar with what's going on? Please give an update on this campaign and let us know anything that we need to know about it.
Yes, I am coordinator of the campaign to free Ahmad Sadat. He is the general secretary of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFL. LB. Ahmed Sadat was arrested many times in his lifetime. Since he was 16 years old, he was subjected to various times of arrest. Sometimes he would spend a year or 2 years, and sometimes he spends 4 and 5 years now. He was abducted by the Palestinian Authority in 2002, of January 2002, and placed in Jericho prison for 4 years, and then Israel invaded Jericho and kidnapped Ahmed Sadat and 4 of his comrades from prison in March 2006. And since then, he's been in Israeli prison. Now, they sentenced him 30 years in prison in Israel without any evidence or any solid reason, except for the fact that he is a member of what they call a prohibited organization, and he's the general secretary of what they call a terrorist organization. So he's a Palestinian national icon, and he is one of the most respected Palestinian and trusted leaders of our national liberation movement.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah, I'm very curious by this because I think it is really interesting, especially for our United States audience, to learn more about what's going on in Palestine, period. Because some of the things you mentioned are definitely concerning about the way that a lot of freedom fighters and liberation fighters in Palestine are criminalized, the way that they're viewed and looked at by the Israeli state and the type of things that the Israeli state does to them. Can you talk a little bit more about that, about generally the state of Israel and how it treats Palestinians and how it treats especially Palestinian political prisoners?
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, all people who are subjected to settler colonization and colonization and oppression, they go through various levels of oppression. And one of the forms that the colonizers do is build jails and incarceration and imprisonment of the leadership of resistance movement and political liberation movement. So, and this is not new for United States, history. It's the history of the Black Liberation Movement and the history of the labor movement and the civil rights movement in the United States, basically full of stories of heroic people who went to prisons and fight injustice in the United States prisons. The same goes for Ireland and South Africa and many other places in the world. And Palestine and the Palestinian movement is an integral part of this international front against imperialism, Zionism, and reactionary forces in the world. So our people, since 1948 until today, over 1 million Palestinians have experienced imprisonment, men, women, children, including infants. Some babies were born in prison, in Israeli prison. So the collective and historical experiences of our movements, part of it, and very important part of it, is the resistance in prisons. Resistance doesn't stop because people go to jail. People continue their resistance even in torture cells and in prisons. In fact, they become a model and an example of steadfastness in many of our heroic prisoners in Israeli jails have written books and novels and short story collections and poetry and studies and you name it. And so struggle in prison is part of the struggle in general. But it is really important to also see that this is not just part of the Palestinian people struggling against occupation, but it is also the arenas in which Palestinians talks about their freedom in a very basic and clear way when we have 6,000 today political prisoners in Israeli prisons. Many of them are the leaders of the student movement, the labor movement, the Palestinian women movement, and so it is an example of our people and their fight for their right to return and for self-determination and liberation. The reasons that Palestinians, fight today and they go to prison even for throwing a rock or just posting a simple, line on their Facebook pages, you can be subjected to imprisonment. A Palestinian poet by the name of Darin Tatur went to prison because she read a poetry and she published a poem in her Facebook page. So today there are also Palestinian children, over 120 Palestinian children in Israeli prisons, about 52 Palestinian women. And these people for us are the actual genuine legitimate representative of our struggle. And we hold them high, and they have a very important place in the conscience of Palestinian people, as well as a consensus amongst Palestinians that they represent our struggle and our aspiration for liberation.
Most definitely. Thank you so much for all of that information. I think one of the things to me about Palestine is that here, for myself and for others who are activists in the United States, Palestine really stands as a beacon of light for inspiration, for what is possible when it comes to revolutionary movements and the power that people really hold when they come together to resist and fight back. I want to get back to something you mentioned earlier, the PFLP. Can you talk a little bit more about what the PFLP is and its historic significance in Palestine? Many of our audience members might not have heard of the PFLP before.
The PFLP is the second largest organization of the PLO. It is the largest leftist organization in Palestine. It was established in December 11, 1967, and it was formed at its early years as a coalition of various different groups, and then it took a shape of one political party in February 1969. The imperialist media and the Zionist media always try to portray the PFLP as the organization who hijack airplanes. And so that's their definition of the PFLP. But in reality, this is not really what the PFLP is about. The PFLP is a historical resistance path. It is an international, a party that has an Arab and international dimension of its entity. So the PFLP doesn't look at itself as a Palestinian organization or a national organization only, but it takes the Arab identity and international identity as its two other angles. And to understand the history of the PFLP and the way it developed, of course, Palestinians, hold a very high respect of the sacrifices of the front, but at the same time, the PFLP today faces many challenges, and particularly in terms of developing and renewing its role, intensifying its resistance role in Palestine and outside of Palestine. And one of the most important challenges that faces today the front is to build and rebuild the Arab left. The PFLP is pretty much is the front line of the Arab left fighting imperialism, Zionism, racism, and occupation. And today, the youth of the front and the cadres of the front in prison in Palestine and outside Palestine are definitely discussing how to play a more comprehensive role in terms of rebuilding the relationship of the front with the Black Liberation Movement in the United States, with the indigenous native struggle in Canada and the U.S. and other places. Recently, there were conferences, youth conferences, and efforts in South Africa and in other places that the youth of the front played major role. And at the same time, the PFLP is a political party that firmly believes of armed struggle. Armed struggle is a very important way of fighting the Israeli occupation, because the front understands that without making the occupation a costly and a lost project, you know, nothing will happen. We have from the experience of all you know, people around the world, that without might and power and force, the imperialist and racist will not listen and will not budge.
Those were definitely great points to make, Khaled. I think one of the things that you touched on, which I really wish we had more time to go into, is about the destruction of the Arab left and the role that Palestine plays in rebuilding the Arab left and the PFLP in particular. But I do want to close out. For my last question, the one thing I really want to know from you and would love for you to share is what you think that our listeners here in New York City, our listeners here in the United States can do to really contribute to the liberation of Palestinian people. What can we do here to fight for Palestine?
Defeat Trump, fight police brutality and racism in the United States, support women rights and the LGBT community, fight for equality, and every victory you achieve in the United States will be a victory for our people. At the same time, it's really important to strengthening the relationship between the Black Liberation Movement and the Palestine Liberation Movement. It is really important to strengthen the relationship between the labor movement, the student movement, and to build a camp, anti-imperialist camp. We must defeat Trump. We must defeat this capitalist hegemonic system. And we know that you are, you know, in the United States, people are fighting in the belly of the beast. So we look forward to more engagement in the struggle against this this system and defeat it. And we have no doubt that we will be victorious at the end.
Thank you, Khaled. We are out of time. Again, that was Khaled Barakat. He is a Palestinian writer, activist, and international coordinator for the Free Ahmad Sadat campaign. Khaled, is there any way that we can have our listeners continue to stay in touch with the work that you're doing and follow the work you're doing? Anything you want to share with us about how we can support?
Yes, they can absolutely check the Free Ahmad Sadat campaign .org, freeahmadsadat.org. And at the same time, you know, write to us, and we want to know more about the struggle of people in prison, how people are fighting incarceration in the United States. And salute to Mumia Abu Jamal and all the people who are struggling to be in the United States prisons. Thank you.
All right, that was Khaled Barakat. Thank you so much for that interview. I know you're listening in somewhere. So we are going to open up our phone lines to you, our listeners. We have a next interview coming up, and I'm very excited about it. Forgive me for the sound. We're working on it. It is an international guest. But reminder to you guys can call in. It is 212-209-2877. Join our program and join this conversation about Palestinian resistance. So today, for our next segment, we're going to move on to have a conversation with Huda Amori. She is the founder and former chair of the BDS campaign at the University of Manchester, national organizer for BDS campaigns in the UK, campaigns offer at Palestinian Solidarity Campaign UK. So welcome to our show, Huda.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful, great. I want to know that There's so much I want to know in particular with you, but particularly I'm most interested in knowing about what BDS is. I've been involved in the BDS campaign, but I want you to share with our audience what BDS is and what the BDS campaigns that are running in the UK look like. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's exactly what I can talk about. So I'll just give you generic, what is BDS, what are the fundamental aspects of BDS and what are its aims, and then I'll just move on to the UK campaign. So the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions campaign started in 2005, and it was a call from Palestinian civil society for the international community, including people like me and you, to boycott, divest and sanction Israel as a non-violent means to pressure Israel into complying with international law and the basic principles of human rights. And these the three crucial demands of BDS include the for Israel to end the occupation and colonization of Palestinian territories, for the Palestinian citizens within Israel, who make up 20% of Israel's population, to have equal rights as their Jewish counterparts, as right now they face more than 50 laws which discriminate against them within Israel's apartheid regime. And of course, for Palestinian refugees, Palestinians who've been forced and exiled from their homes by Israel, to have their rights to return to their homes granted as stipulated in international law. And it's essentially this amazing tool we can actually, as an international community, show true solidarity, hold our governments to account for their complicity with Israel's apartheid regime, and hold our institutions to account. So, for example, in the UK, we have many different aspects of the BDS campaign which are ongoing. I'll begin with the universities, because I think sometimes when you look at the students, that's where you really feel inspired. And we kind of began the Apartheid Off Campus campaign late last year, which was essentially calling for UK universities to divest from companies who are complicit with Israel's apartheid regime. Quite similar to the US, UK universities invest hundreds of millions into these companies and often millions into arms companies arming Israel. One example of such company is Caterpillar, who supply the Israeli army with armed bulldozers used to demolish Palestinian homes. And, you know, when students are being having to pay tuition fees, and then their tuition fees going towards such atrocities, it becomes students' obligations to hold their institutions to account. And just at the end of last year, we had the first UK university divest from three companies who were arming Israel, which was a brilliant victory here in the UK. And then moving on to our financial institutions, because of course it's not just educational institutions, it's financial institutions like HSBC, who invest over 830 million into companies arming Israel. And until recently, this number included Elbit Systems. I'm not sure if you know, but Elbit Systems is Israel's largest private security firm, who actually openly admit and market their weapons as being battle-tested due to them being tested on Palestinian civilians in Gaza.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you so much. There's so much information, really, that we can get into when we talk about the movement for BDS internationally. Can you talk a little bit more about not just BDS, but also the overarching movement in the UK for Palestine? I know in the diaspora, there are many Palestinians in the United Kingdom. Can you talk more about what it's also like to be a Palestinian in the diaspora in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak about that from a personal experience as well, because my father's Palestinian, my mother is Iraqi, and I think it's quite an experience. You know, you feel quite privileged that you're here. You know, in the UK, you've got a British passport, you've got a lot of privileges that your brothers and sisters in Palestine don't have, but at the same time, you're fortunate to have this passport to the point where you see if universities and institutions all around you are complicit, and funding is an apartheid regime, and it becomes a surreal reality when you see how complicit this country that you're in is in the crimes against the Palestinian people. But I think in the UK we have you know this great unity and a growing movement of people coming out to show support for Palestine. So just as the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, we have 60 groups across the country who regularly protest against corporations, against institutions who are complicit. And then in times of national organizing, just recently we had the Exist Resist Return March to commemorate the Nakba. We had 10,000 people out in the streets of London, which is amazing considering it wasn't a reactive protest. It wasn't a protest which was necessarily reacting to a sudden increase, although there was a sudden increase in bombardment in Gaza. It was people going out because people want to say that, you know, it's time for our government to end their complicity and to keep going until the Palestinians are granted the rights that they deserve.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for sharing all of that information. I'm really excited, actually, to talk about this, because really when we talk about the demonstration that you just spoke about, I mean, 10,000 people in London, that is very impressive. That is very important, because imagine what it would be like if in every single major city across the country and across literally the world had those types of demonstrations. So I think we have a caller. Do we have a caller right now who has called in to join our show? Do we have a caller? Well, at this moment, we're going to continue to move on. So either way, Huda, I want to ask you one last question. And that question is going to really be more about what you can share with us about Airbnb. I know some people have spoken about it in the news lately, the Airbnb boycott, and what the relationship between the Airbnb boycott is to sanctions and why that's important. Not sanctions, I mean settlements, and why that's important that are being built. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, just the anecdote behind, you know, having to lose your home as a Palestinian to a military occupation and being forced to live in exile, and then seeing your home or your grandparents' home listed on Airbnb.